Welcome to In the Moment. South Dakota Speaker of the House Mark Mickelson is backing two ballot measure questions he hopes will reach voters next November. One would raise the tobacco tax to help lower tuition for the state's four technical institutes. Another would limit out-of-state money for ballot measure questions. That ballot question is aimed at national groups such as Represent Us, which backed Initiated Measure 22, an ethics reform package passed by voters that Republican lawmakers ultimately repealed. Representative Mickelson sat down with SDPB's Lee Sturbinger to talk about the upcoming legislative session, the race for governor, and those ballot measure questions.
Last session in the legislature, we ended up spending a fair amount of energy repealing a measure that was poorly written, had some good ideas in it, had some bad ideas in it, but it was pretty sloppily written. And we looked into the group that backed it, and they were out of Massachusetts. They don't have a lawyer on staff, and it was a piece of legislation that was 35 pages that was really written by what I'll call internet marketing people who have a political business model. Unfortunately, they have no intention of living in the state, and they don't care if what they've written is poorly crafted, because you won't run into them at the high school football game on Friday night. You won't see them in church on Sunday. They don't have any intention of ever living here. And you look into it a little bit and say, well, why in the world would they bother coming to a state like South Dakota? And they're obviously pushing an agenda, and they're picking states that have a low signature requirement to get on the ballot. And they'll come in and typically pay someone to be their sponsor. And so they find a South Dakota citizen willing to be their sponsor, and they go and gather enough signatures. And Lee, we've been out there spending some time petitioning. They're back again this year, and they are marketing their measure as something that it's not. They're using a 7 or 8 word description to describe a very lengthy piece of legislation. And I guess what we're doing is we're trying to keep out-of-state groups from funding ballot measures in South Dakota. The initiated measure process was put in place in South Dakota for South Dakota citizens to protect themselves from the influence of out-of-state money on our government. Back in 1898, we were worried about East Coast Railroad money and their influence on our elected officials. And so, in my opinion, when groups like them pick a state like South Dakota, they're picking it because we have a very easy ballot to access. We have a low number of signatures to get on the ballot, and we have relatively inexpensive media markets. And so we're trying to restore the citizens' right to petition its government and to try to keep out-of-state groups from perverting the purpose of our initiated measure process. And we looked into it. There were 5 measures on the ballot last fall that were brought to us by out-of-state groups. One was a Georgia payday lender. One was a California businessman. One's the group I just referenced out of Massachusetts. There's a New York political group out of that was pushing open primaries. And then there was a couple unions out of Illinois and Minnesota pushing a piece of union legislation. And so that we just decided, we brought a measure last session in the House. Representative Gosch out of Mobridge and Senator Youngberg out of Madison that said, listen, we need to eliminate the influence of out-of-state money. It passed the House with 50 votes out of 68. But my interpretation is the influence of these groups and the lobbyists that they hired were able to successfully kill the bill in a Senate committee. And looking forward, we thought the same thing would probably happen this session. And I was talking to some political friends of mine. We did a little bit of polling, and we found out that 2/3 of South Dakotans would support a measure like this at the ballot box. And so we're out circulating a measure that would prohibit out-of-state groups from funding ballot measures.
How is that written so as to not, you know, I guess sort of infringe on free speech? Because, you know, I guess, you know, money now is technically, you know, free speech. Is it that state line thing that you're trying to?
Well, I think you have to first acknowledge that if you take a broad interpretation of speech, it does infringe on their speech. But you're allowed to do that under election laws. You need to back up and understand that if I want to donate an unlimited amount of money to Senator Thune's reelection campaign, I can't. there's a limit as to how much I can donate to Senator Thune. And the reason is there's a compelling public purpose in preventing corruption in government. And so the Supreme Court has held you can infringe on free speech. And the question really is, do we have a narrowly tailored solution that address a compelling state interest? Alaska has a out-of-state money ban on all races. Their Supreme Court has found that to be constitutional, and the U.S. Supreme Court hasn't ruled any differently. So we view this as though, although it's a modest infringement on free speech because it only applies to ballot measures, it does meet a compelling state interest, and it's narrowly tailored. So we believe it's constitutional. The only other thing I'd say is, of the five ballot measures, there was $9.3 million spent on those ballot measures, and 97% of that money came from outside of South Dakota. So I would assert to you, Lee, that doesn't represent a South Dakota-initiated measure process.
And there's another ballot measure that you're kind of working on as well, right?
There is. We were everyone you talk to in South Dakota is having a hard time finding qualified employees. One of the pipelines for qualified employees are our four technical institutes: Lake Area Tech in Watertown, Mitchell Tech in Mitchell, Southeast Tech in Sioux Falls, and then Western Dakota here in Rapid City. We knew that their tuition was high. What we didn't realize, legislative research did a study, we didn't know that it was the third highest tuition in the country. We didn't know that it was double Nebraska, double Wyoming, and double Montana. I didn't know that two of my friends out here in Western South Dakota, who are very committed South Dakotans, active public servants, county commissioners, state legislators, on the state board of technical ed, have sent their kids to go to technical institutes in Wyoming. And so if we want to grow our workforce here, we're going to have to address that rate of tuition. And so we had decided that a tobacco tax increase would be the most palatable way to the public to bring some additional resources to bear on what's a very compelling need to develop workforce in our state.
What kind of tax are we talking here?
We propose to bump the tax on a pack of cigarettes by a dollar, and we would have a corresponding tax increase from 35% to 55% of the wholesale price on other tobacco products, which would be chewing tobacco and cigars.
What kind of, I guess, support are you seeing, you know, with that?
Well, you know, most people that don't smoke have little objection to the tobacco tax. There are some people that said, I don't like a tax, and I respect that. I wouldn't be proposing this if we didn't have to address workforce in some way. Industry in Sioux Falls, which is where I call home, is very actively supporting this. We have a network of probably 50 industries that have agreed to voluntarily step up and have people from their organizations circulate the petitions to help us reach our signature goal. We've also got groups working pretty actively in Mitchell, Watertown, and Yankton. We have some preliminary efforts underway here in Rapid City, and it's further away from where I live, so we just haven't been able to develop as much support. But we have a couple meetings with some key players that we hope to draw more support out in this area, because let's face it, Rapid City has the same workforce need as the rest of the state, and maybe worse. They're a little bit further away from some of the other population centers in the state.
I guess I want to shift gears a little bit here to maybe what you might be seeing coming up in the state legislature.
Well, there's a number of things that we are working on, and we're going to have a caucus retreat with the House Republicans to get some input from them as to some of the issues that some of the legislators are working on. I think there is a lot of frustration with the counties over, one, funding, and two, the additional expense represented by something called Marcy's Law. Marcy's Law was Constitutional Amendment S. It was sponsored by a California businessman who spent $2 million of his money pushing this ballot measure here in South Dakota. And there are, I think people would agree there are many good elements in Marcy's law. Some of them were already in state statute. Almost everyone would agree that the kinds of proposals that were in Marcy's law don't belong in our Constitution. Our Constitution's pretty sacred. It is supposed to provide for some overarching principles, and then we implement those principles with state statutes. So we're going to replace Marcy's law with a statutory regime that's in our state statute, hopefully remove the $5 million of costs annually that the counties are experiencing, over $400,000 here in Pennington County. And then I think we may try to repeal Marcy's law, get it out of the Constitution and put the good elements of it back into state statute. That will be a fairly significant effort, no doubt, but we've got strong support from the Sheriff's Association. We have strong support from the State's Attorneys Association, and we have real good support from the county commissioners. And so I think it's something worth doing. It would improve public policy, in my view, in the state. Another issue that really has just arisen is I've heard that Sioux Falls has the highest incident of individuals enrolled in online classes at institutions that are not a publicly funded school. So not at the Board of Regents. And we've done just a little bit of digging, and what we have found is that we aren't making these classes available when it's convenient for students to take them. A lot of these people work. And so they need to be available in the evenings, they need to be available on Saturdays, and they need to be available in the summer. People today expect convenience. And so if our state institutions are going to be in the business of higher education, they're going to have to meet today's students where today's students want to learn. Clearly, the conventional campus is going to be our primary emphasis, but we've got to improve our flexibility and our adaptability. And I'm concerned that the tenure or the tenured nature of our faculty contributes to the rigidity and the lack of flexibility. And I expect there will be some legislation requiring faculty members to be available to teach when students want to take classes, not when professors want to teach them. And that might be an uncomfortable topic for someone who's been doing something the same way for 30 years. But if our institutions are going to remain healthy and thrive, they're going to have to change. And if they're not able to change from within, then I would expect we'll have some legislation requiring that flexibility to occur.
Are you seeing anything in terms of the budget and kind of revenue numbers? Are we going to experience another deficit like we did, you know, last session?
So far, it looks like it. We're $6 million down 2 months in. And everyone that listens to this knows that there's ups and downs in life. And as a state, we have ups and downs in our revenue. Forever, our economy has followed the health of the ag economy. And that's soft right now with commodity prices. Yields, despite the drought, yields do look pretty good across most of South Dakota. Outside the farm economy, in our communities, we have record construction activity. We've got record non-farm employment. And we've got very strong wage growth in jobs off the farm. And in the background of that, our sales tax revenue is down 2%. And if we don't fix our ability to collect sales tax from online retailers, then the state budget's going to be under a lot of stress, not just this year, but kind of over the long haul. And I would submit to you that's probably the most significant issue facing the South Dakota taxpayer. And a lot of the folks that depend on the state budget for funding, whether it be the social service programs like Medicaid, our correction system, our K-12 system, and our Board of Regents system. Those four systems that I just named consume 90% of the state's general fund. And if we're going to have a strong economy off the farm, but still have our revenue shrink 2%, we're not going to be able to run this state with the same programs and the same tax structure.
Is it time to start maybe that discussion of diversifying the tax structure in the state?
Well, we're clearly not going to diversify any further into the real estate taxpayer. I think they would communicate to you, and they've communicated to me, our real estate taxes are high enough. There's really no appetite for an income tax. The tobacco tax proposal is one way of diversifying our revenue stream. Our proposal is expected to raise a total of $30 million of additional revenue for the state budget. And we're suggesting that $20 million of that ought to be spent on the technical schools. And that would leave $10 million extra to meet some of the other needs, particularly in the healthcare arena. I think it's time for us to demand that, one, either the Supreme Court overturn their 1993 Supreme Court holding that didn't allow us to enforce our sales tax on out-of-state internet retailers, which the Attorney General is going to take that case. The legislature passed a law requiring that. It was found to be unconstitutional by our South Dakota District Court and our state Supreme Court. We're hopeful that the U.S. Supreme Court will hear that case and look at the facts and say, hey, we understand that a catalog retailer doing business in North Dakota in 1993 is very different from the landscape that we see today, and overturn that decision and allow states to enforce that. We are joined by 25 to 30 other states who find themselves in a very similar predicament. We're hopeful that Congress will act because they can give us that authority. Unfortunately, there's a guy out of Virginia by the name of Bob Goodblatt who chairs a House Judiciary Committee that has the jurisdiction on this issue. He's funded by out-of-state groups out of Silicon Valley, and so he keeps killing the bill. And Congresswoman Noem is leading an effort to get past Bob Goodblatt and let the House vote on that issue, because we do think it'll pass the House if we can get it to the House floor out in Washington.
Thank you so much for joining me. I have one final question, I guess, on possibly the race for governor. You know, it was always kind of assumed that maybe you would run and then you sort of bowed out in December. Is there somebody who you're supporting up to this point?
No, I'll back the best candidate who's willing to take on some political risk to move this state forward.
Yeah.
We've got good people running, and we're fortunate in a small state like South Dakota, we still attract good candidates for that race. And we've got several running in the Republican Party. Who knows who all will end up running in the gubernatorial primary, but I'm looking for people who are willing to take on some measure of political risk for the greater good.
Are you possibly eyeing a lieutenant governor seat with whoever?
No, I have no interest in that job.
Thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Speaker Mickelson.